From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski is showing her independent streak as she discusses the impeachment trial of President Donald Trump. She said she disagrees with Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell's pledge to hold the trial in total coordination with the White House. But Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin says it would be a mistake to read too much into that.
Murkowski's comments to Anchorage TV station KTUU were picked up by national news outlets. Here was a Republican senator breaking from the pack, criticizing leader Mitch McConnell on his pledge to work hand in glove with the president on the conduct of the president's impeachment trial.
And in fairness, when I heard that, I was disturbed.
But Murkowski's comments on impeachment in recent weeks have cut both ways. She's criticized the process Democrats are employing, too. In a speech last week, Murkowski chided House Speaker Nancy Pelosi for holding on to the articles of impeachment rather than sending them to the Senate.
So now you've got the Speaker basically trying to use this as leverage to encourage us to perhaps adopt rules that maybe she would like better than her rules. I don't know. But I'm confused by that one, to be very honest with you. That doesn't make sense.
Murkowski also criticized House Democrats for not compelling administration witnesses they wanted to call.
In fairness, if you seek that information, there is a way, there is a process to gain that, and that is through the subpoenas going to the courts.
She said that in mid-December, before the House Judiciary Committee finalized the articles of impeachment. But it could be read as a critique of Article 2, alleging obstruction of Congress. Murkowski also said then she thought the House would have tried harder to build a more substantial body of evidence. That's first and foremost a criticism of the process. But she came close to saying the Democrats have a weak case.
You have a record that that the House will base its articles on that is perhaps not as full a record as it needs to be.
She says she's staying neutral in keeping with the oath she'll make at the start of the Senate trial.
I will be asked to say, I will do impartial justice according to the Constitution and laws. So help me God. And that is what I'm going to do.
To remove the president, Democrats would need 20 Republican senators to cross the aisle. Where Murkowski's independence is more likely to be a factor is in Senate votes on whether to call witnesses. Democrats need only 4 Republicans to vote with them to prevail on votes about the rules. Murkowski says she will demand a process that is full and fair. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Populations of more than a half dozen species of groundfish have rebounded to healthy levels nearly 20 years after their numbers plummeted from overfishing. On January 1st, federal regulators will reopen several thousand square miles of ocean off the U.S. West Coast to fishermen who have not been allowed to trawl for rockfish, Pacific perch, and boccaccio there for years. One conservation group says it's the biggest environmental story that no one knows about. Much of the success comes from a rare collaboration between fishermen and environmentalists. The first ads for the 2020 census launched this week in a remote part of the state. An advertising campaign for the rest of the country is slated for next month. The advertising launched this week by the U.S. Census Bureau is aimed at residents of the 220 small Native Alaskan villages where census takers will begin the once-a-decade headcount next month. The count begins in January in these remote villages because the ground is frozen, allowing easier access than at other times of the year. The rest of the country will begin filling out the 2020 census questionnaire in March. A project that maintains seismic monitoring stations in Alaska needs more funding to continue fully operating. Anchorage Daily News reported scientists, lawmakers, and federal agencies are promoting the permanent installation of the Transportable Array Network. The National Science Foundation project was installed temporarily beginning in 2014. The stations can monitor earthquake activity and track weather, wildfires, and volcanoes. The system can also detect North Korean nuclear testing. Many of the stations in northern and western Alaska are set to be removed over the next 2 years if funding is not secured to maintain them permanently. State attorneys are asking a Ketchikan judge to dismiss a class action lawsuit brought by 3 Pioneer Home residents after monthly rates more than doubled. Top-tier residents are liable to owe $15,000 a month for state-run assisted living. KRBD's Eric Stone reports.
Attorneys filed a suit in Ketchikan Superior Court on behalf of Pioneer Home residents in Juneau and Ketchikan, claiming that dramatic rate increases threaten to bankrupt elderly Alaskans who live in the state-run assisted living homes. The lawsuit asks a judge to issue an injunction against the rate increases and prevent any residents from being evicted for not paying. One of the plaintiffs, Ketchikan resident Eileen Casey, is now nearly $100,000 in debt to the facility, and administrators have threatened to kick her out of the home, according to court filings. The state attorney general's office's 12-page answer filed on December 23rd doesn't dispute these facts. Rather, it asks the court to toss the suit on technical grounds by calling into question the plaintiff's standing and other factors. State attorneys also argue that the plaintiff facing eviction hadn't paid her rent prior to the hike or applied for payment assistance. It also denies the plaintiff's claim that previous incremental rate increases make a large jump of around 140% in some cases unfair. The state's filing lays out some general avenues for a defense. The state could argue that Pioneer Home residents haven't been harmed by the rate increases. The state could argue that residents had other options for relief besides suing. And it could argue that the plaintiffs are acting in bad faith by challenging their bills in court. A timeline for the lawsuit remains unclear. In the meantime, the octo and nonagenarians continue to live in Pioneer Homes in Ketchikan and Juneau. They are among the nearly 500 residents in six Pioneer homes affected by the increases. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
The owners of the Mustang Oil Project on Alaska's North Slope have missed the first loan payment to the state as limited quantities of oil have begun flowing. Alaska Journal of Commerce reported Tuesday that Caracol Petroleum LLC missed a loan payment to the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. The authority says Caracol was due to make a $3.1 million payment on October 1st, but the payment had not been received as of December 23rd. The authority says Caracol incurred $310,000 in late fees and penalties for not making the payment within 30 days. Two Alaskan high school students have been given the opportunity of a lifetime. They'll be headed off to Washington, D.C. as part of the United States Senate Youth Program. They'll spend a week visiting historic monuments, talking with U.S. senators, and maybe even meeting the president and his cabinet. KTOO's Matt Miller has more.
Back in 1966, Stan Selmer was Student Association president and senior at Skagway High School when he was selected for the trip to Washington, D.C. But when he finally arrived, Selmer's military chaperone wasn't too keen about his long hair.
I had to go get two haircuts in the basement of the Senate building. Fortunately, I got a barber who was a decent guy, and he didn't charge me for the second haircut. But the first one was $25. In 1966 dollars, that was about all the spending money I had with me.
Selmer was among the first Alaska students selected for the United States Senate Youth Program. It's organized and completely funded by the Hearst Foundation and targets students interested in public service. To get into the program, students have to be nominated by their high school principals, and then there's a competitive application process. If they make it through, students get a college scholarship and an all-expenses-paid trip to D.C. Selmer got to meet national leaders and pillars of Alaska's statehood history.
President Johnson was president. Got to meet Bartlett, Greening, Rivers. I didn't get to shake the president's hand, but I got to shake the vice president's hand, and that was Mr. Humphrey. And I still have a tie tack that he gave me that I wear occasionally.
And he was whisked around to various sites in the nation's capital.
We got to go down in the basement of the FBI building and listen to them, with no hearing protection, shoot a submachine gun. That was really neat. Hard on my ears, but still neat.
Selmer says the trip was a good learning experience that had lasting impact. This time around, two students from Fairbanks and Juneau will travel down to Washington, D.C. in March and pick up a $10,000 college scholarship. Stella Talman is a senior at Juneau Douglas High School, Yada'at Kathle. Talman says she has become increasingly politically active. She's participated in letter-writing campaigns, organized events, and testified for more school funding and against school violence. At first, she and her fellow students felt intimidated testifying before lawmakers or speaking out.
We realize that there are so many issues in our state, in our city, in our country that really affect us every day. And even if they don't affect us, they affect people that we care about. And we thought, well, why don't we do something about this? There are ways that students can get involved. Even if we can't vote yet, we can still be civically engaged.
Talman, whose role models range from newly elected young members of the Juneau Assembly
to teenage climate activist Greta Thunberg, is excited about spending the week visiting historic monuments. She's also excited about possibly meeting the president, the cabinet, and others like Senator Bernie Sanders and Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
I've heard that you don't get much sleep during it, but I'm definitely willing to give up that sleep in order to meet some of the most influential people in the world.
Talman says she's leaning toward a career in the Foreign Service, perhaps in the Middle East. And what about Stan Selmer? He's now retired after working many years for a utility in Skagway, but he also served four terms as city mayor and just recently filled in as interim borough mayor. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Much of Alaska had been frigid this holiday week as temperatures across the state dipped as low as negative 50 degrees Fahrenheit, a stark contrast to an unusually warm winter. Rick Toman, a climatologist with the International Arctic Research Center in Fairbanks, says that the weather pattern is normal for this time of year.
We've just gotten so accustomed to these extremely, you know, just persistent runs of above normal weather that even somewhat below normal for more than a day or two really seems outstanding.
Temperatures in the northwest Arctic villages of Ambler and Buckland reached 42 degrees below zero this morning. The interior village of Alakaket had the coldest temperature in the state this morning at minus 56 degrees. Toman says this last-minute cold snap likely won't change Alaska's record-breaking climate forecast for the year.
2019 is, at this point, virtually certain to be the warmest year of record for northwest Alaska and the state as a whole.
While not making much of a dent in the average temperatures for the year, Toman says the cold snap is helping create sturdy sea ice, which has had trouble forming during this warmer winter.
The cold weather has helped to pretty much freeze over the Chukchi Sea, of course, very late freeze up, and now starting to work on the Bering Sea. So that's all good news for moving forward as we look ahead to spring.
Sea ice is broadly used by subsistence hunters to traverse the Arctic and generally is frozen solid by October. And finally, a woman from Alaska has donated body armor to a Wyoming canine officer. The Laramie County Sheriff's Office says the bullet and stab protective vest for canine officer Ari comes from a donation by Denise Nading of Anchorage through a nonprofit organization called Vested Interest in Canines. The donation was made in memory of Mel Nading, an Alaska State trooper and pilot who died in a helicopter crash in March 2013 while returning from rescuing a stranded snowmobiler in Talkeetna. Ari joined the Sheriff's Office this fall and is trained in narcotics detection, apprehension, building search, and suspect tracking. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Thursday, December 26, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.